Warning, what you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Everyone doing? Welcome to UCB Long Form Conversations. This is a palate cleanser. That means that for this episode, we won't be doing an individual interview. We're going to be talking about some improv technique. We're going to be nerding out. And today's technique we're going to be talking about second beats, approaches to second beats. My name is Nick Mondernock. I'm not alone. With me is
Ronnie Adrian,
James Mastriani,
and Sarah Clasbell.
Thank you guys so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Great. So why don't we start off with a quick definition of a second beat? There might be people listening to this podcast who are not familiar with that term.
Second beat is where you have your first beats, where you define what the scene is about, what the game is. Second beat is just a revisiting of that game. Right?
Great. Yeah. A new scene that's returning to a comedic idea, right? Mm-hmm. We're seeing another example of that comedic idea.
Yeah, I like to think of the second beat as like sort of like throwing that game or that idea into something that we haven't seen already, or like another example of that, a more heightened example of it, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Love that. Maybe we could talk about our approaches to a second beat. So my question will go around. You guys do a first beat. Let's say you're in a Herald. Then you're on the back line thinking about where you might take that idea for a second beat. What goes through your head? How do you guys approach a second beat? Ronnie will.
It generally is the idea. I guess it depends on two ways. It depends on if I was the unusual.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me think about like the idea of being like, what is my, if I was unusual, then what was, you know, like the catalyst of why I was unusual? Like, what was the thing that was making me unusual? So then it becomes that idea of, so then how do I kind of like recreate that thing that I found that was fun? I mean, but it could be a ton of things. I think one thing that really kind of helped me open up the idea of second beats was when I had when I took an Alex Ferney class a long time ago, like an advanced Herald class. And he's a real stickler for like how you would label a game, so to speak. So then, like, if the game is something like the man that wears hats as opposed to the man that wears a hat, those are two different games.
Right.
You know, and so, like, that type of idea is being, like, it's the deciphering of being, like, what exactly was that game? You know, like, if you could do it. And then, therefore, it becomes more of, you know, you can play that game more succinctly, again, as opposed to kind of playing, like, the parallel version of that game.
Right, right. So the way that you define it is such an important part. I think a lot of times I definitely, as an improviser and as a student in classes, like, you do a first beat and then a second beat, and then the teacher would say, cool, so what was the game? And both of us say different things.
Yeah.
Like, a guy who brags, just a monster at work. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So I think what you're speaking to, Ron, is the importance of like really list being as specific as possible in those labels. And again, hopefully, like, even within that first beat and I'm going to like a Ferney philosophy, we should have like a pretty clear label moment and a clear framing moment
definitely.
That we're both listening to.
I tell people constantly, like, it feels like you're cheating, but say the game in the first beat. It helps if you think the game is one thing and your partner thinks the game is something else and they're like a half step apart, that's still going to come out with different ideas for the second beat.
Yeah,
for sure.
If you say it and you put it on the table, then your scene partner sees that and says, I agree with that, or I have an alteration for it. So, but either way, you're like getting on the same page.
Right. Yeah.
So you can go
communication as improvisers.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. Totally.
And usually I find, too, like, with going off the label thing is, like, you know, when you have, like, buzzwords or keywords that describe your game in that first beat, then essentially it's so much easier to just extract and plug, you know? Like, what's a more fun version of this? Now that we know we have clarity and simplicity, now we can just take that, extract that idea, whatever the label is, and plug it into some place where it's even more magnified, which I think is simple. Yeah.
Great.
I think I always try to if I can think of an analogous way to play this first beat, then I know what the game is. If I can only think of a time dash, I don't have a good game.
Oh, interesting.
Is how I think of it. Because people will often be like, yeah, well, the funny thing in the first beat was like alligator boyfriend. So we're just going to take alligator boyfriend somewhere else. And I'm like, is that the game? Or is the game something, is it a part of the relationship? Like, can't, if you can't take it analogous, then you, then that, there's a problem there, I feel like.
Then you haven't distilled it to what, like, the central irony is or the central, like, comedic premise.
Not that you need to take it analogous every time, but if you can't think of a different way to play that, then I think, I feel like most of the time you don't have the bare bones of what the game is.
Let me ask you, Sarah, we're talking about approaches. Would you, do you opt for an analogous second beat? And again, just to define our terms really quickly, an analogous would be we're not returning to those same two characters. We're taking that idea and we're putting it into a different context. So, for instance, if we have a braggy coworker in our first scene, maybe we see a braggy crab.
You got to see a braggy crab.
Would you opt to analogous when you were on Harold Knight?
I usually prefer to take things analogous. That's just my own preference. I feel like if for me, if you're taking something, if I'm taking something time dash, I'm like, the audience knows what I'm going to do. They know, they can see, like, they can see the steps ahead of me. Whereas if I go braggy crab, they get surprised more.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think I find myself in the opposite camp. And one thing that I think about when I'm going from a first beat to a second beat, we talked about like maybe a justification and exploration. But I also sometimes in my mind wonder if part of what the audience and I liked in that first beat might be kind of the world that it's set in, right? And that's not always the case. Sometimes I think it's easy to extract it. But so, for instance, sometimes like in a first beat, we might have, again, using my braggy coworker as an example, maybe they've created a world and a business of business at Mott's, and we've kind of, we kind of like this coworker. We found out enough about them that maybe we might miss them in a second beat. And just as an example, I think where I thought about that, this was my first team delicatessen. I was a man who was shaped like a glue bottle, and I was really confident about that. And so we, like, that was and I loved my body. My character just like loved his body, and thought everyone did. And then I kind of like went analogous for that one. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to take, because I was I felt like I was playing more in that camp. I'm going to take that out. And then I was just like a human head on a chair, and I could immediately feel the audience go flat.
Totally.
And I was like, for this instance and in this context, I think the audience liked that glue bottle guy. I think, again, and I think
even
there's
just
games
hearing
that lend
about
themselves.
It, I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see more of it.
Yeah. So I think that's one thing that I think about. Like, or sometimes there'll be like a relationship or a dynamic where I'm like, God, I just like those people. So I think that can sometimes be it. And again, context, I'm sure like context is such a huge part of that, but it's interesting to hear that. That take for sure.
I don't like analogous over time dash every single time, but it is what I go to. And I think because of that, like, can you take the intention of the game from the first beat and bring it to the second beat in a different way?
Totally.
Well, let me ask you to speak. Let me ask you this, Sarah. And obviously, Sarah is a very good improviser and very, very durable. I don't know.
Durable improviser.
But it's that idea of, do you consider yourself like a big character player in the sense of, I guess I'm asking that in the sense of, because I'm not necessarily the biggest character player, and I also find myself defaulting to a straight man a lot, a sense, just because I'm like, somebody has to be the straight man if you're not going to be, right? But it becomes that idea of, as the person who is not necessarily like more character driven, is it the idea of being like, well, because I approached it in a way that's so close to myself, and now this is kind of, I guess, to be talking about myself in a sense, close to myself, then now it's like, oh, okay, well, then I can't be just that thing again in the same atmosphere. So I have to figure out a new way to be myself in a different way, so it's more surprising in that sense. Because, I mean, and this is the way, like, the sort of analogous thing was kind of, like, explained to me by a coach one time. I was like, oh, okay. And I think it's that idea of, like, he said, if you feel like in that first beat you didn't really fully blow out that idea or explore that idea in a way, then you should come back to it.
I agree.
I thought that was such a, because like I think, you know, you're always taught to be like, okay, you hit these first beats, hit those three beats or whatever, so you can really get it going. Or the idea of being like, well, if you blow out that first beat, really, then you can you come back to it?
Sure.
Then you probably can't, but if you feel like you haven't really
explored it. That's always been my take on it, too, is like, I think it depends on the first beat for me, because I think everything that we do is setups and payoffs, right? So, like, I feel like sometimes I think Herald teams go analogous too much, because you know how you'll have those first beats where you have the game, but your game never gets out of exploration mode. Mm-hmm. Like, all you do, you and your scene partner, you just discuss the game. You negotiate the game. You talk about the pros and cons of the unusual behavior, but you never pay it off. And so I've never understood, like, if you don't pay off the game in the first beat and then you go analogous, you're essentially going from one analogous setup to another analogous setup without ever having payoffs or punchlines.
So an example of a scene that might be what you're speaking to, let's say we have a gentle boxer talking to his manager in the first beat, like, you got to hit him, Donnie, you got to hit him. I don't know. In that one, it might pay off to see a time dash. We want to see this guy in a fight.
Yeah,
right?
Like, absolutely.
So that might be an example where we want to see it.
Absolutely. If we just negotiate the game the whole time and we don't get to see the patternization of, like, you know, maybe the boxer going into the ring, fighting, losing the round, coming back.
Yeah.
Then we see that dynamic again. That's starting to feel like payoff to me. Now I feel like we can go analogous.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
I just don't want to see, like, I am tired of seeing, hey, it's Thanksgiving dinner. Here, the game is, I'm going to keep bringing back Alligator Boyfriend. It's a perfect game. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't want to then see Christmas with the same family, Alligator Boyfriend.
You don't want to, time dash, you in particular are averse to, seems to be like a Mad Libs time dash, right? Like, where it's just like same thing, but just like a separate dressing. As opposed to maybe there's like even a time dash version that gets away from that of like, do we see those two in couples counseling, for instance?
Yeah, exactly.
So in other words, it shouldn't just be like, it shouldn't just feel like a one for one for you, like
holiday,
a one for one repetition.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Holidays isn't the important part of that, in other
words.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's that relationship or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Cool. James, we're coming around. We touched a little bit about it. You just did a first beat going into a second beat. What are you thinking about?
Well, the first thing I'm thinking about, honestly, is sort of what I was just talking about, is like, do I feel like I paid off the game? If I feel like I paid off the game, then I'm usually, my personal favorite type of second beat is like an all world type of second beat.
Oh, cool.
Where, because I have a very rigid view of the Heralds, where I think that, like, in the first beat, it's easier to back up the straight man to help form the idea, right? So, like, when you're supporting in a first beat, I think, you know, you do walk-ons and sort of stuff. We really want to, like, hone in on what is unusual in this world, in this context. So I think it's easier when you support and stuff in a first beat, for me, to be another straight man. But then in the second beat, it's party time. So for me, I feel like I like to take that unusual idea and see, okay, what if we had everybody's brain on that unusual idea and how we can get different interpretations of it? So I guess for me, as the Herald goes on, I think we need less straight men.
Right.
So I always like, so I go like, did we pay off the idea? If we did, then I'm usually looking, I'm usually going to try to look to go analogous, or personally, I just like an all world. What if we all thought this? What
kind of a Sherald mentality where we're going to like kind of see more brains on that.
Yeah.
So an approach to that might be like in a second beat, maybe we don't need to see more straight, but like what happened if like the world peanut potted this idea? Whatever, like the whole world, a world where everyone brags, for instance, where we kind of like see and explore that.
Yeah,
might be a fun way to get more people in it.
It's like going into the Twilight Zone, you know, of like where everything is this game.
Yeah.
Or maybe we just have one straight man and then we're just ruining this person's life.
Right.
Over and over and over and over.
We have a one-eyed man in the land of the blind kind of a situation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so fun. I would find in Herald's, whenever that would start to happen, I was like, oh, we're fine. And the second beat, I think when I was like, oh, we're going to be okay. Someone's going to come in. It'll always be surprising because we don't know what direction even.
Totally.
Literally, we don't know what person the unusual thing is going to come from. So I think there's something so fun about that. Yeah.
And another thing I think, like, I'm always looking for, or when I was on a Herald team or coaching Heralds, is like, I think second beats, you know, I think it's important to stay dynamic, right? Which means constantly changing. And like, I hate second beats that start looking exactly like the first beat.
Right.
So like if, you know, Nick and Sarah are, if Nick starts the first beat stage left, mm-hmm. Sarah is stage right, they're 3 feet apart, they're facing each other, and then you start your second beat the same way, I'm already like sort of bored.
Sure. In other words, sometimes people think the second, initiating a second beat is, I'm going to take the same, the initiation I used from the first scene, from the first beat, and I'm going to say that with a new specific. Right.
For
maybe.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to, oh no, the game probably developed with the reaction, with the justification probably developed, and now let's see what we've kind of ended up with rather than just what we started with at the top. Like, that's what you're speaking to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Change as much as you can.
Right. I wonder if part of it is like, because I'm so in that camp of like of being dynamic and really surprising ourselves in the second beats. But when I teach 201, I think maybe because I'm just like, whatever you guys, if it resembles the first game, I think sometimes and when I'm teaching 201, I'll be like, hey, for this class, totally cool to literally just be in a different place and do a similar thing. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing I've been doing more is like, don't think that's all a second beat is. That's for the purpose of 201. This is what we're going to be doing. But I totally agree with that. To jump in a little bit, I think there's kind of I almost see Harold Wise and second beats kind of as being a fractal of a scene itself, right? The way that a scene explores and builds and we find surprises. I think strong Harold at playing those ideas in a Harold is similar. Mm-hmm. So just in the same way that, often in a scene, even if we're just doing the exact same thing over and over again, we're going to have diminishing returns. I think the fun of exploring from beat to beat. Oh, now that I really know that braggy coworker is doing that because they think that if you don't let your light shine, that that no one will ever see it. Right? Like never hide your light. It might be fun to see what this person would think about a humble monk. Right? Maybe this person hates a monk and thinks that they're hiding something from the world, etc. Might be a way. So that's kind of as a tangent to build into talking about using justification in second beats, which is to me the so much of it, and the payoff is, all right, now that we understand the core logic of a character or a world, how can we like explore that in a way that's going to surprise the audience from beat to beat, so that we're not just doing one thing for 10 minutes over the course of three beats, et cetera.
Let me ask you this, James. Because it's that the funny thing that, you know, like, because even still now, still actively trying to do good heralds, is that idea of being like, you're focusing more like you're trying to build a complete show, right? Uh-huh. And I think the thing that, you know, like, you're doing a show as your team and you want to have a complete show, but you're also doing something and you're having moments in your show that is kind of like strictly to get the audience on board or to catch the audience up on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is the idea of being like, how far is... You know, like, using your example of being like, if we start the first beat, you know, like, Nick is stage left and Sarah stage right or whatever, and they kind of do that thing. You said you're already bored.
Yeah.
So how far is away from that thing but before the audience, you lose them because they don't recognize what that thing is? You know, like, it's that thing of being like, if they place it and it's like, oh, I know what this is already. And then you can still have new specifics or new things or whatever. But it's the idea of being like, I'm going to set you guys up so you know what's happening.
Right,
so then therefore now you're already on board.
It's accessible.
So
it's accessible to crowd. Yeah. That's a good...
It's a great question. And I think that for me, it comes back to that idea of, I think we all subconsciously recognize the buzzwords or the keywords from the first beat that describe the game, right? And I think it's super imperative to get back to that as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. So, like, using Sarah's example of, like, alligator boyfriend,
it's a great example.
It's a great example. Super grounded. But, you know, I think we immediately want to say the phrase alligator boyfriend as soon as we can to let the audience know, hey, we're back here, without having to replicate the stage picture and all that sort of stuff so that they feel like they're seeing the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily like I just think that you can't change the game, right? You want to keep the game the same. So to stay ahead of the audience, I believe you got to change as much other stuff as you can, including stage picture, including, like, you know, where we're at, who we are, all that sort of stuff. So that, especially if you're going analogous, although I will say, like, Time Dash, even to me, like, if you started in the same in the same exact stage picture, unless that's a part of the game, it doesn't – immediately I'm like, this feels too similar.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my instinct is to start where we left off. Mm-hmm. In like you, if you end the first beat there, you kind of want to start your second beat at least there, energy-wise.
Yes.
Or at least like there's so little time at the top where the straight man doesn't know what the crazy man's deal
yeah.
is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, in the first beat, we spend a bit of time doing that, and then we can just play what the game is. I think, like, let's start. Here's what the game is.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to – yeah, it can start where the first one ended.
More in the middle. Yeah. Starting more
Very
in the middle
often,
than
yes. –
yeah, then like, in
That's
other
right.
words
–
and often we don't need to rediscover in particular,
sure.
right?
Because yeah. we all know.
Sure,
it
exactly.
It just happened a few minutes
right.
ago.
I think that's such a good mm-hmm.
it's like,
a helpful point.
It's like Spider-Man and Spider-Man Part 2, right? It's like Spider-Man in the first one, you're getting this origin story. How did mm-hmm. he become Spider-Man? He got bit by that spider. Who's his family? Like all that sort of stuff. But when we go into Part 2, we don't need to hear again how he became Spider-Man. We know mm-hmm. how he became Spider-Man. So starting from the beginning in Spider-Man 2, we immediately just want to see this dude flying around, you mm-hmm. know, using his webs and, using
right.
his webs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Going back to Ryan, I think that's such a great question of, like, accessibility. And I think one thing that's important, especially as I'm thinking and applying that to using our exploration, using our fuller understanding of a game by the end of it, I think that's also the importance of, in a first beat, like, returning to logic and helping the audience learn the logic of that character.
Yeah.
So as an example, for instance, like, there was a scene I watched at Herald Night where they were playing, like, a pretty simple game. And then they had just, like, I think almost the last line was a justification. And then they took and they tried to explore that justification in the second beat. And I think the audience felt confused.
Yeah.
I think that's because they didn't understand. They hadn't spent enough time on that exploration for the audience to be like, oh, I can get on board. I understand how this person thinks or the logic of XYZ. Mm-hmm. And I could get into it. So that might be another thing you might need to evaluate in your first beat as well.
Yeah.
I have an example. I brought a few examples from my 401 class, but there's as an example, there was a scene. There are two neighbors, and they're competing over whose house is smaller, right? They're trying to compact their house and, like, live minimally. Yeah. There was just a one-off line at the very beginning, which was that it was about environmentalism. Very, very top. By the end, I don't think anyone in class remembered except for me who had written it down.
Right.
I think it'd be really hard to pay that justification off in the second beat. But I think if you return to that and help the audience understand
yes.
that logic, if they, again, talking about the buzzword of environment, like the environment, mm-hmm. We only take baths in gray water, et cetera, and explore it. Then I think we could go almost anywhere in that second beat because we really understand the logic of that world. Mm-hmm. And then we don't have to do just smaller blank, you know, whatever that might be. So that might be some importance of laying groundwork for your second beat in your first mm-hmm. beat, right? Like helping yourself, doing yourself that favor.
Totally.
To get the audience on board for
sure. I think if you get to that second beat and you have, and you think the audience doesn't remember that justification
mm-hmm.
though, I think you need to, you need to remind them about, the smaller thing and the environmental thing
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to get them to be like, oh
yes.
okay,
yeah, exactly.
Great, that's,
yeah.
And then
totally,
you can,
totally.
Expand out.
Right. Yeah. Not to say that there's not a way to adjust. You're right about it. There's a way mm-hmm. to adjust there. But at least keeping in mind, like, did we really have a full understanding of that logic? Like, have we heard that logic enough that we can kind of, like, really apply it? Or do we need to do some work even at the top of our second to bring them in?
I agree. Because I feel like a lot of times in that example, you would see the second beat would be like, oh, the first beat was like small houses, and we had it was based in environment, and that was sort of our philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't extract that and bring it with us, then the second beat's going to be like, oh, small luxury hotels, you
right,
know,
right,
it's
right,
like
right.
And then it's just sort of
yes.
it's so predictable as opposed to like really the game is what extreme measure are you taking for the environment?
Sure,
so
sure.
if the first beat, I keep hitting this microphone. If the first beat is like smaller houses. And we keep hitting environment, then the second beat could be like, I only live with bees,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because like mm-hmm. all my roommates are all just a
yes,
bunch of bees
yes.
because of the environment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we've done the work in the first beat. As an audience, even though bees are super far away from smaller houses, we at least know that buzzword of environment.
Philosophy.
You've taught me that philosophy that I can then apply to a fun second beat.
Yeah.
And now, again, when I get to a third beat, here was, talking about the problem with Mad Libs. Here was when I would panic on Harold Knight. I've done two beats that are just Mad Libs. I have to come back to a third time. Yeah. This audience is sick of me.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I can do a discovery. And here's, and I haven't invested in my first two beats. I've done no exploration. I can't really surprise them. That's kind of be going outside the bounds of what I've established, which is probably pretty thin. So again, that kind of comes back to that why and that exploration, right? Yeah. So because I think without exploration, surprise is much more difficult.
Yeah. I feel like people are not exploring enough of whys mm-hmm. in their first beats. Mm. So they get to the second beat and they're like, God, why did this happen?
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm just, sure. I'm a braggy sure. coworker mm-hmm. for no reason.
Yeah.
And then you've got to do so much. It's so much harder to do a second beat mm-hmm. when you like kind of have like a little bit. You're like, I'm bragging because I like to brag. That is,
that is
the worst justification. Like mm-hmm. I do this because I like to. I'm always like, ugh.
Right.
Yeah. I hate
right.
seeing those scenes where someone's like, the game is a professor's in love with his student. Why? Because they're in love.
Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
Oh,
right.
That is not yeah. a game. It's yes. so boring.
Whereas if you invest yeah. a little philosophy in there, yeah. just like, this is the only time I feel admired in my life.
Right.
I need
yeah.
a partner who admires me. But also that's going to let us get some surprises and maybe yep. heighten the absurdity in the second beat. Like, yeah. who else might admire you? Maybe like Siri is always like, or you have like an app that always says good job and you're like kind right. of attracted to it.
Yeah.
And you can kind of like explore in that way. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As opposed, yeah, totally.
James made a good point. And I think it's a
first time.
First time for everything.
Made a good point, which I feel like I'm still constantly trying to remind myself, is that idea of being like, you can be in a first beat and that first beat be killing. Like mm-hmm. You're doing like just everything you say and like the back and forth between you and your scene partner, everything is going great. But the idea does become that idea of, but do we really have whatever the justification of this game
sure.
is or not?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. I've had that before where it's like, oh, this is great. And then you go to the back line and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's like, that was really funny, but can mm-hmm. I duplicate that thing? Because they don't right. want to see us do that again.
It's like a lightning in a bottle yeah. moment of just like, oh, man, I just had a really funny reaction. And
totally.
Then we kind of said 10 clever things.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, that's and, you know, getting to a deeper idea of like why, like one thought for this might be like, why second beats? Like, why do we bother doing this? Why do we bother teaching it? And I think it's for what you're talking about. Do we really understand an idea
yeah.
or are we charming our way through the scene? I think that second and third beat is going to kind of be the proofs in the pudding in those second and thirds.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think there's a lot of like watching the indie scene these days, there aren't a lot of teams that are doing second beats. Mm-hmm. And that is and then like I watch Harold auditions and I'm like, yep, no one mm-hmm. knows how to do a second beat. Mm-hmm. And that's because they're not practicing it. I don't this is just like a small tangent, but mm-hmm. I'm like, if people should be doing more of that in indie shows. And I think because I feel like indie shows do so much of like montage-y stuff
mm-hmm. yeah.
that is just like one direction. We're not repeating anything.
Right.
And then that's not building those muscles. Like mm-hmm. Learning how to do a second beat well or not knowing how to do a second beat well, but trying it out and figuring out what works and what doesn't makes people so much better than just like, we're going to montage forever.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. once a year we'll do second beats.
One thing I've been saying to, I just had that question came up in class. Like, oh, this is great. You know, but I have an indie team that's, you know, practicing Harolds and we don't have time. And one thing that I've been saying is kind of isolating whatever Harold muscle you're working on in practice and applying that in your 15 minute show. So for instance, mm-hmm. Even if you're not doing a Harold, you might get like, all right, we're going to do 15 minutes, get a suggestion, three organic first beats, and then we're going to do second beats of those. And that'll be our, you know, 15 minute show more or less roughly. Or if you guys are working on group games, for instance, you might do an all group game show just based on one word, et cetera. But mm-hmm. just like you're saying, something to take the muscles that you're developing and apply them in front of an audience is huge.
Yeah. And I agree with what Sarah is saying, because I feel like like heralds and montages are way different,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I think that the one benefit of just getting on a stage and doing a montage is you could do something and never have to revisit that
yes.
idea because
yes.
that idea sucks, mm-hmm. right?
Uh-huh.
And with a herald, you don't have that luxury. So, you know, you don't have to work on the discipline and the focus of making sure your first beats are supremely grounded, human, mm-hmm. and based in, you know, something relatable and real, as opposed to in a montage, you could come out and just do your first scene could be insane.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you could just go, well, good thing we don't have to come back
yeah,
to that.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
But in a Harold, if your first beat is insane, and then you have to come back to this insane
yes.
idea, Good luck.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting? I was talking to I'm on Weekend Team JV and Magic to Do, which we don't do second beats. We don't apply that. But the interesting thing, because sometimes my students will be like, oh, you guys didn't have a justification there. And I'll say something similar to what you're saying, which is, hey, you know, we're living in this for maybe 3 minutes. Yeah. But, you know, but the other thing that I say is, I bet that scene would have been even better if we had laid a better groundwork.
Always.
I bet, you know, I mean, yeah. Maybe we're able, you know, because we've been improvising together for 6 years, that we can kind of charm our way through 3 minutes. But I think we're always going to be in better shape if it would have been a great Harold first beat.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it could always be better. Even with charisma, you know, or whatever, you know, people have to charm their way through. Like, those same fundamentals will help a scene the same way they'll help a Harold.
Well, I remember a few years ago, in fact, you were coaching Outside Dog, mm-hmm. Nick, and Matt Besser came and gave us notes after a show, and it was not a particularly good show.
I want to piggyback on that. I coached Outside Dog, one of the most consistently great teams. He came for your worst show. I thought that you guys were freaked out because he was there. It was a complete coincidence. I cannot tell you how rare it was for you guys to have a bad show, but this was definitely your guys' worst show, and working with you guys for about a year.
It was just heartbreaking. But thank you for saying that. And I do remember something he said in the notes that, like, still stuck with me, where he was like, you know, the stuff that you were doing was fun, mm-hmm. and it was silly, but for me personally, and this is I'm paraphrasing Matt Besser's words, but he was like, for me personally, if you're walking after a show and you're congratulating yourself on how silly and fun it was, you're missing the point. Mm-hmm. You should be walking after a show and going, this is how smart and relatable and grounded it was.
Yeah.
And that really stuck with me, mm-hmm. because how often have all of us left shows high-fiving and going, God, that was just silly.
Oh,
right?
I know.
That was just silly.
That character
totally.
Was so crazy.
Yeah. And thinking that's bad. Silliness is not a bad thing, but it's not the smartest,
totally.
Most grounded. Yeah.
You're so right. I think one thing I was just saying, and sometimes sometimes I'll watch a show and I'm dying. I'm just cracking up. And then I walk out and I'm like, man, that was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
As opposed to, there are some shows where I'm fucking dying and I walk out and I'm like, damn, that's good. I walk out with maybe a little bit of fear, like, I need to be a better comedian. Yeah. And I think that should be what we're after. Because I think the audience will always lower their bar for an improv show.
Yeah. Yep.
And they'll always lower it.
There's nothing that feels better than doing something that is fun and silly, but you find a way to ground it and make it feel real.
Totally. Yeah.
That
absolutely.
Is, like, the greatest feel. Because you got the best of both worlds. You're we're crazy. We're, like, a magical council who's, like, one's an octopus and one is Merlin and, you know, one's LeBron James.
Right.
But for some reason, we're grounded and we know why we're here and we know, like, we can do that fun scene that is grounded for some reason.
Like, I think a team like Big Grande, and I've seen them a bunch of times where it's like, they can be very silly. Mm-hmm. Like, they can lean in, like, they, but the thing that I think that they do that it makes everyone, like, enjoy them being silly is because, A, it is that thing of being, like, you get to see, like, you get to see four guys truly, like exploring the thing that they think is funny, but what they do is also they don't leave that thing to just, like, they don't go like, oh, we're just gonna let Drew be silly in the corner, it's like, you're being silly, but we're exploring this idea, it's like, we're not just like, oh, you're gonna be the crazy guy over there in the corner that says something every now and then that people go like, that's funny because it's just so random. It's like, we're going to explore whatever this thing is, and we're going to dig into this. And I might be weird too, or whatever, but it's like, that thing is super silly, but we're not going to leave that on the table. It's just like, that's just a silly thing. It's like, well, what is this? And then we build off of that, the idea of whatever this thing is, which I think is something that people just don't necessarily do when it becomes that idea.
And kind of a Harold, and kind of like applying that Harold muscle too, because they'll return to ideas once they've explored them and make discoveries off them. Even in a mono scene, if they're doing like a mono scene, for instance, that'll come back. Those Harold muscles.
Yeah. I think, but even to what you're to Sarah's whole thing is like, if you're an indie team, you should be trying to kind of explore more than just the idea of just a bunch of throwaway scenes. But I remember I never really knew that when I was on an indie team. Like, it wasn't until, like, I had made a Harold team, and our first Belmonte, our first coach was Johnny Meeks. And we were talking one day, and he goes, I don't really like watching montages. And it wasn't because he just didn't like montage. He was like, well, because they have no form. Like, he was like, they don't go. And that was the first thing that I heard when I was like, oh, like, the idea of doing a montage and being like, maybe we're going to come back to this later. Or maybe we're going to revisit this thing, or like having that kind
of
thing.
Or assume this is a world where that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
And part
so
of it is.
Yeah, so I was, go ahead.
Well, part of it is because when you're doing a montage, you're not really accountable. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to commit as much. I coached a group 2 weeks ago, and one of the guys was like, yeah, I just don't remember my scenes. So when I get notes, I just don't remember what my justification. I'm like, first off, you need to stop doing drugs or whatever it is that is like cutting off. Like you can't remember.
Better drugs. I black out.
Find a better drug to do.
Find a better drug.
But I was like, then why are we doing this? Uh-huh. You know, like let's be accountable. If I understand doing, and I love doing those shows that are indie shows that where it's just like we're screwing around and it's so stupid and there's no justification. But those are fun to do once in a while.
Yeah.
But they don't. No one is getting better by doing those shows.
Besser also said something in that notes section, which I loved. He said, it's kind of like masturbating. It feels good in the moment, but you're ashamed after.
Yes. Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
I love that line. I take that with me. Even doing like weekend shows, I'm just like I'm like, oh, yeah, this
it's
was.
So true.
Like, we could do better than that.
I agree.
We have just a couple of minutes left, but I just wanted to bring up a few more 401 examples, and then we could just see where you guys might go with them. So, great. So this is a first beat. Dr. Seuss is an English teacher. He's in the principal's office, and he only speaks in rhyme, which drives the principal crazy. That's the first beat. So Dr. Seuss as an educator, as an actual educator. Mm. Where might you guys go with the second beat?
Wait, so he's a thing and he only speaks in rhyme?
Yes.
And it's in the principal's office?
In the principal's office, yeah. We have Dr. Seuss as an educator.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me personally, I'm probably going to want to see it on a broader scale since it's like the first one's in the principal's office.
Yeah.
So I might want to see like Dr. Seuss doing a TED Talk.
Oh, cool.
Dr. Seuss.
Like a presidential debate.
Yeah.
Sometimes, we haven't really touched on that, but sometimes even going presentational in a second beat can be so fun.
It's another heightened.
Yeah, or that idea of like almost like a group game. Oh, maybe we could do something like really different with that idea, I think is a really fun one. Mm-hmm. I like the idea. I think this relates to something we were talking about earlier, which is evaluating the first beat, which I think is something we could maybe universally take away for people listening. But it's maybe not the most active place because we're not seeing him actually teach. In my mind, I would even just go to teaching a class. And my second thought is we've only seen one expression of that deeper idea, which is Dr. Seuss specifics. Mm-hmm. Maybe like they're taking a test with like Woozles instead of pencils, etc. Like we kind of like again going back to that idea of exploration, earned surprise, and that
because that's such a. I mean, because the idea becomes like it's that thing of being like, is this funny because Dr. Seuss is here, or is this funny because we have just basically taken like the knowledge that we have of a Dr. Seuss world and then applied that to something that becomes a tangible thing for everyone to get on board with,
right?
Because now when you have that second beat. Like, you can be a part of that world, and Dr. Seuss never show up again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, but now you're living in whatever that world that you created.
Yeah.
And that's become fun because the world is so absurd, but you're living in it and treating it as, like, if it was just a weird, like the regular world. Mm-hmm. And that's where the comedy comes from.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like that.
Or you could also, like, I just had the idea of following the, because sometimes in a second beat, I like to follow, like, the frustration of the straight man, you know? So, like, another second beat could be, you know, like a time dash where the principal now has hired a new teacher because Dr. Seuss wasn't working out, and that new teacher is Stephen King, and he only talks in, like, super dark and, you know, horror type of specifics.
Blowing out that author world, the world of authors, like, teaching. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't really touched on, and maybe this might be just, like, a last point, that I thought this was one of my big breakthroughs in second beats. So often I see not worrying about heightening stakes within second beats, I know, is a big thing, which is so often, I think when I was coming up, I think that even we were told, like, all right, if we have a first beat, Dr. Seuss is in a principal's office, maybe the second beat, like, raise the stakes. Now he's a general and he's giving orders, but it's only in rhyme. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the such a good note was that in raising the stakes, it's minimizing your options and where you might take an idea.
Absolutely.
And I think Will Hines put it in a good way, which is not worrying about raising stakes, but heightening absurdity in second beats, which might be just seeing it in a different place, like a classroom, yep. for instance. Mm-hmm. But yeah, any thoughts from you guys? I don't know. Was anyone else taught that? I know.
Yeah,
early
on.
Absolutely. Early on.
I think they don't teach that anymore. Though.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's like out of the curriculum.
But I still see it's interesting because it's such a habit because I still see people, like students still do it. And so
many presidents, so many
I know, exactly.
Zeus.
Yeah. Police officers, doctors. And again, it's like, I'm like, yeah, but is that what, if it's a person who can't make a decision, it might be just as fun to see them, might be more fun to see them in a subway.
Than
as a doctor.
I like to work. I like to think of it working fact to fiction, both like micro and macro, right? Mm-hmm. Like your scenes and your forms working fact to fiction. So fact is our world, grounded, what we know, our universe, that sort of thing. And then you earn your way to fiction, fiction being more abstract, more absurd. So I think like in a second beat, instead of going stakes and winding up with President Jesus space, in your second beat, you can earn or work your way to fiction, which is more abstract and more absurd.
Oh, interesting.
Because you've already started in our universe and it's identifiable, right?
Yeah. I think I feel differently. I feel like, for me, a first beat can be in a fictional world as long as it's recognizable. I think,
as
for
human,
instance, or even more so, for instance, I think, like, let's say we have a premise of uncreative witch. I think it's fine to be witches in that first beat. I think how you play it and pace that game and the heightening of that absurdity to me would be is kind of more of a first beat issue for me, rather than being like strictly in our world. For instance, is my thought. If I hear uncreative witch in a pattern game, I want to be as grounded a witch as possible, as recognizable to the audience, but not necessarily take out the fiction of the witch and see them as like uncreative, like writer or something like that.
I think as long as we keep the like your emotions and intent fact,
the
whatever we the skin we put over that can be anything. We can be dinosaurs having a fight. As long as we are doing it from a place of honesty, like how would I feel
recognizable,
in a fight with you, even though I'm going to add these specifics of dinosaur specifics,
oh, cool.
but like treating that like our intention as human.
Awesome. This is great. To wrap this up, I wonder if we might even go through and talk about maybe a pet peeve you guys see. I think we've talked about a few of them in second beats. I'll say one of them for me is that I see. In classes is a really fun first beat peanut pod scene, and then arbitrarily someone becomes a straight man in the second. Kind of the opposite of what you're saying, James.
Yep.
Where it's just like they have so much fun together in the first and the second, when someone just goes, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, anyway, that's just as a thought. Maybe.
Makes no sense.
I think for me, like not bringing the intention from the first beat into the second beat. And that's part of the game thing. But like the reason why that crazy thing was happening, not seeing that being brought into the second beat, I'm like, well, why, you guys?
Leaving the work behind. You've left some of the work behind. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Now you're just starting over and like making it harder for yourself.
A ton in Herald auditions. I think we saw that a lot. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, damn, what you said was so smart.
Yeah. Your first beat was so good.
If I said that, I would never stop saying that philosophy. But I mean, obviously, we're in a pressure situation. But yeah, you're right. I'm just like, something like, damn, that was real good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, James.
I think maybe it'd be, I think for me, it'd be like those second beats where, and it just, I guess it all depends on the game, but those second beats where it's, the same two people the entire time. Mm-hmm. Nobody else gets their fingerprints on the game, because this is an opportunity, I think, for the whole ensemble to let everybody know not only do they recognize the game and the scene, but they're excited to help heighten it and like support it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to see the whole ensemble, if they can, attack the second beat.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
So when it's just like Nick and Sarah in the first beat and then Nick and Sarah again in the second beat and nobody helps and it's like – looks so similar.
Especially if it's like dying on the vine a little bit.
Exactly.
I'm just like, God, there's so much we could do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
I lose interest.
That's great.
Quick.
Yeah, Ronnie.
I guess I will say it's a pet peeve, and I've been guilty of this, especially like my first year or two on Herald Night, is the idea of letting a rough first beat affect your second beats, or even that your mindset for the rest of the show. Because I think A, first beats are very important. I really do think they're very important, but sometimes they don't always go off flawless. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, sure, like you might not necessarily know exactly what the game is, so to speak, coming from that first beat, that second beat, because there might have been like one or two or even three kind mm-hmm. of unusual things hanging. And I think it's that idea of coming out of it and then going like, I don't know, what is this thing? Like, what yeah. were we trying to, and then trying to figure out a way to make them all work or whatever.
Sure.
And then by the time you get that second beat and within the first five lines, you're like, oh, this is going bad. And then letting that then like lose your confidence uh-huh. and then letting that kind of yes, affect you throughout yes. the rest
we're
of it.
Screwed, yeah.
Like, you know, like you have to commit to that thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm even saying this even for myself is it's like you have to kind of commit to whatever that thing is. Mm-hmm. Like, because the one tangible thing that I will say to anyone listening is that idea of being like, there's two things you can learn. You know, when, you know, like teams know what a game is mm-hmm. because they're so ready to get in there and play.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
So
yeah.
then if I had to really say like a tangible pet peeve is the idea of being like everyone knowing what the game is so well that they don't let the moves breathe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like,
oh, interesting. Kind of the reverse, the other yeah. side of the spectrum from what James is saying.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. you come in and it's like, oh, we're the guy that's going to give, we're frustrating the straight man by, I'm going to give him something that he didn't want. And then the other person comes in and he gives him something that he didn't want also. But mm-hmm. before he has time to kind of react and yeah. like really oh. kind of like get into it, somebody else is already coming in and so giving totally. Him something. You know,
I also
like,
hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you need the reaction so badly.
So badly. Yeah.
One thing to, you were talking about having so many unusual things, just as a small, I'm trying to think of concrete things the listeners can take away. Sometimes I think when you're in that, or I think when you are in those first beats where it's like, damn, they're like six things. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes you need to treat that as an opening and almost take the strongest premise yes. from that and initiate yeah. it hard yes. in the second.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm thinking about it in that way. That might be a little tip.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, definitely. Sure. That is one of those things because, and trust me. Somebody, the other person in that scene, because I'm always like, I will fully admit that necessarily like second beats aren't the strongest thing that I do. And I think I default a lot to letting someone else initiate.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that I think part of it is like, sometimes I don't have the confidence in my idea that I should have.
Uh-huh.
But then also it's like, oh, I feel like I'm good enough to be like, whatever you do, I'll be able to make it good.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
that's, it's kind of like an arrogance to it as well. But then it's also that thing of being like, they don't, if I don't, if there was two things, I don't necessarily know exactly what you're playing. So it's that idea of being like, well, there's three things. If you're going to come into that second beat with like, I want to pull the fact that, you know, like there was braggy thing, but the alligator was also kind of braggy, you know, like you're doing, it's like
great,
children or whatever.
Example.
It's like, you know what? I don't care about the thing. All I care about is the braggy portion of that. Mm-hmm. So I am initiating clear to you that this is what I find unusual. This is what the game I want to explore. Mm-hmm. Now let's hit it. You know,
love it.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. You guys, thank you so much for coming in. So fun talking to you guys. I could do this for another few hours. Let's go around and maybe we could say how we can find ourselves. Ronnie, where can we find you?
There's a Twitter account that I never use. So have at it, but I'm never on it.
We can never find him, yeah.
I'm on Snapchat once again. Why would you follow
oh,
me?
Nice.
You don't know me. I'm hardly ever on it. Cool. I'm on Facebook, but if we're not friends, that's
Facebook.
Weird.
That's no.
I have an Instagram account. You can see.
Great.
I put pictures.
You're also on the Dragons.
Yeah. I'm also on the Dragons on Harold Nights. You know, Mondays, Thursdays, or Fridays. Look at the schedule. White Women. I'm on the team. White Women. We have a show every second Friday at UCB Sunset mm-hmm. at 10:30. Your token friend. Cage match, cage match every Wednesday. UCB Franklin at 11 o'clock. Tuesday night Thunder, 8 o'clock
it.
Every Tuesday at the clubhouse. I mean, I'm around.
You're around.
I'm around.
How can? Where can we not find you?
It's not possible.
Right, not possible. Cool. Thanks, Ronnie. Cool, James.
You can find me. I perform with Outside Dog every Tuesday night at 10:30 at UCB Sunset. My Twitter at jmaz1111. Also, I'm going to plug my own podcast
yeah.
here. I do a podcast called I'm Too Effing High, where I get comedians high on marijuana and then put them to comedic challenges.
It's so fun.
Yeah, Nick was on an episode.
It was insane.
Going to be coming out pretty soon.
Oh, no.
And that's where you can
Thanks,
find
James.
Me.
I am on Cardinal Redbird. We perform every Tuesday at 11 at UCB Franklin. I'm on Twitter at Claspy, Claspy. Don't find me on Facebook. I won't add you.
You can find me at my home at Nick Mandernach. You can find me on Twitter at Mandernick. And Legitimate Goddamn Theater, second Tuesday of the month. It's a 10-minute play show. Come check that out. JB, Magic to Do, Sassy Bluff, and Toledo Rep are also doing a once a month show. So check that out. It's going to be a fun one. Cool. Thank you guys so much. Yeah. Have a good one. Bye.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.